Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to another episode of Injustice Investigations. I'm Al Scott. Today we got a couple of breaking news stories. First, we'll go to Washington, D.C., where any minute now we are expecting Deputy Attorney General Rosenstein to offer his resignation, or he is expected to be terminated. Earlier they said that he was going to offer resignation, then they said he was going to be terminated. Now we're learning that he is scheduled to speak with Donald Trump come this Thursday. Again, that's from out of Washington, D.C., Deputy Attorney General Rosenstein is expected to be terminated or offer his resignation sometime today. Out of Dallas, Texas, a police officer, Amber Geyer, has finally been terminated from the Dallas Police Department. The incident happened back on September the 6th, shortly after 10 p.m., where she alleges that she was so tired from working a 12-hour shift that when she entered into an apartment, she thought that apartment was her apartment. She had entered someone else's apartment, and she thought she saw an intruder on the inside of her apartment, but it belongs to 26-year-old Bachman Jean. She shot Bachman Jean twice in his chest, and later he was pronounced dead. Within 24 hours, she was charged with manslaughter, and since then, there has been an outcry that Amber Geyer be terminated from the police department. The new police chief, Renee Hall, alleges that she does not have the power to fire Amber Geyer because there are local, state, and federal laws that she has go by. Well, we found out that was not necessarily true. It was at her discretion whether or not she terminated Amber Geyer, especially when the integrity of the police department was at stake and it was a high-profile case. So today we learned a couple hours ago that five-year veteran of the police, Dallas Police Department, Amber Geyer, has been terminated from the police force, and we'll talk more on her story tomorrow. But for now, we are in Shreveport, Louisiana, and it is a race for District B. And I have on the line with me Laura McLemore, who is a candidate for District B in Shreveport, Louisiana. Laura McLemore is a professor at LSU. Good afternoon, Laura.
Hi, Al. How are you?
I'm doing great. How about yourself?
Fine. Just busy.
Just busy. Okay, so you are running for District B in Shreveport, Louisiana, and I know that you have never held this seat before, and so it's your first time. So some people know you and some don't. So if you will, briefly give us a little background on Laura, if you will, please.
Well, okay. I am a Shreveport native. It's my hometown. My family goes back. I'm the fourth generation to call Shreveport home in my family. I went to elementary school and graduated from high school here. And I just see a lot of things in Shreveport that I think need to change more than they have. And so I decided to run for city council.
Mm-hmm. Now, we know Shreveport has its troubles, just like many other cities, you know, but there are many issues that are on the table right now in Shreveport. One is the sewer and water issues. We have 3132. Mm-hmm. And what's on everybody's lips that I speak with lately is crime, violent crime in Shreveport. It's like every week, now at least two or three people are getting shot. Maybe one is killed, and it looks like it's only getting worse. So, one of my first questions to you would be: do you think that this current administration is doing enough to fight crime in Shreveport, Louisiana?
Well, what I hear when I go to every neighborhood, people are concerned about crime. So I would say that no, apparently we are not, the current administration is not doing enough if people don't feel safe in their neighborhood.
Yeah, because we have you have people. Not only are they not feeling safe in a neighborhood, but we have to be honest. Some people are leaving Shreveport, if only to go across the bridge over to Bossier City, Louisiana, where violent crime is not as high as it is in Shreveport. So, and then with that being said, businesses are beginning to leave Shreveport, and businesses that you would want to come to Shreveport, they might look the other way. So how do you fix that? How do you address that, Laura?
Well, I think there are a number of ways of addressing that. I should say I don't think that crime is the only thing that's causing people to leave Shreveport. It certainly is something that would perhaps make someone choose not to come here. But I think in my platform, I have advocate community policing, more community policing, a better, closer relationship between police and the neighborhoods that they are responsible for.
Okay. So now, I think you have something similar to that now with the, pastors on patrol? Is that similar to what you're suggesting?
Well, I think the pastors on patrol is a little bit different than what I'm suggesting. We do have an example, though, in Allendale where we have bike patrols now. And those are police officers who are on bicycles rather than in patrol cars. They get an opportunity to be closer to the neighbors. The neighbors know them and recognize them, and they recognize neighbors. And I think that it contributes to better trust between the police department and the people they serve, and that trust makes it easier for neighbors to cooperate with the police when there is a crime. And it makes it easier for police to know what's going on in the neighborhood. And I know that Allendale has consistently had a lower crime rate than most of the districts in Shreveport since this bike patrol has been implemented.
So I guess you would say that would be something that would work in all of your areas, because you are campaigning for District B, and District B is a very large territory, right?
Yes, it is. But so I think there are 23 different neighborhoods, but I think that all of them would benefit from having a better relationship with their police liaisons and their patrol officers.
And I can agree with you on that, but there's also the issue of...
That is an issue.
And so how do we...
It's one of the reasons that police leave our community. And it's one of the reasons that it's difficult to attract the best police officers to work here.
When I was reading your platform, and you talked a lot about... being in the community, getting out, and I applaud you for that, because I don't think enough city leaders, politicians does that. They sit behind a desk a lot, but I know you have been out. I think you were out this weekend meeting neighbors in the city. In doing that, do you find that people open up to you more about the issues that are going on in Shreveport? Because a lot of them just don't attend the city council meetings. When you look at, if you watch them on TV, sometimes it could be 10, 15, maybe 20 people sitting in there. But do they open up more when they're face-to-face with you and tell you that the issues that they are concerned the most, do they open up to you more, you think?
Oh, absolutely. Especially when you ask them what they think. Instead of telling them what you think.
Exactly.
I have learned a lot.
Now,
yes, I've learned a lot.
Mm-hmm. And so do Allendale welcome the police, in the area like that?
Yes, I think that it has been a very popular program among neighbors in Allendale.
Water and sewer issue. What do we do about that? That's a major concern too, right?
It is right now. I think the major concern that I hear from most people is that they understand why we need to replace the sewers. They would like to know when their neighborhood is going to be dug up and when it's going to be put back together. I think that's communication is key there. In the water department, I think probably, I don't know exactly what the problem is, except that it has gone on for quite some time. People have pointed it out, and it doesn't seem to be getting any better. And I think that goes partially to leadership, that department needs to be held accountable and hold its staff members accountable. And if that takes an audit, then that's what we will have to have.
So do you think that Mayor Arlen Tyler has been transparent, has been honest with sharing with council members the issues pertaining to the water and sewer problems in Shreveport?
I can't speak to Mayor Tyler's honesty or veracity. I just think that leadership is needed when you have a problem in a department like this that has been complained about for months and months, and it's still a problem. Then whatever it needs to be done, it needs to be followed through with, because if saying is true, that's fine, but we're not seeing it on the ground. It needs to be implemented, not just talked about.
Exactly. Okay. Well, if you are elected to that seat, what is top priority for you?
My top priority is to improve communication between City Hall and the citizens. I think a lot of things could be cleared up, a lot of a better relationship could be formed if people were just better informed. I'd like to start a City Hall on the road where we go, maybe a city official or two go to these neighborhood association meetings, and at the very least once every quarter make it to every neighborhood to hear what people are concerned about and to explain what the city is doing and what the plans are, so that people know, for example, when their street is going to be torn up to replace a sewer and when it's going to be put back together. And if there is a delay, why there is a delay. I also think that a citizen's budget would be helpful, particularly in this regard, to explain in layman's terms what the budget is and what it costs to do some of these things.
One candidate suggested that the date and timing of the meetings for city council is one of the reasons why many people don't attend, because most of the people are still at work at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And he suggested that time it needs to be changed. Do you agree or disagree with that?
I agree with that. I don't know that is the main reason people don't attend city council meetings, but it certainly does discourage people from attending, because, you know, my people who work for me would have to take leave time if they wanted to go to the city council meeting. And so where I have lived in the past, the council meetings have been after 5 o'clock, so that people who wanted to attend could go. And that, I think, is a part of that better communication, that it would be more accessible, or live streaming of the city council meeting. But even that doesn't really allow people to voice their thoughts.
I grew up in Shreveport, hometown, love it, grew up in Allendale. Back then, they called it the Bottoms. Grew up on Traverse Street there. And I know in the 80s, crime was pretty bad in Shreveport, but I don't know if crime was as bad as it is now. I mean, back then in the 80s, I think it's worse now. But some disagree and said it was worse in the 80s. But regardless, Cassandra, now, one candidate said that one of the main reasons that crime was violent crime was so high in Shreveport is that the people didn't have jobs. If they had jobs, that they wouldn't be out shooting and killing of one another. Now, me personally, I disagree with that because I don't think if you having a job will prevent you from killing someone if you're upset with them or what whatever, you know. But I guess if you're at work, then, you know, your mind is not on a lot of evil thoughts most of the times if you're working. But do you think that that is one of the problems why crime is so high in Shreveport, that many of the people out there committing the crimes don't have jobs?
Well, I think that jobless people are always at greater risk for a lot of things, but I don't agree that that is the only thing. And I don't know, that is a popular phrase, that the answer to this situation is more jobs. Certainly more jobs would help, but I think that the truth is we need to get to what the cause of this crime is. I don't think we're ever going to get where we need to be on our crime rate as long as all we're doing is chasing perpetrators. We need to get to the cause and figure out how to prevent it, and that could be a number of things. Employing people, more economic opportunities for people would certainly help, but so would education from kindergarten on up. So would job training skills. So would having activities for youth in when they're out of school. So would finding programs to help homeless people be occupied and find long-term housing. All of those things, I think, need to be looked at and addressed. And the real causes, in the 90s, early 1990s, we did have out-of-control violent crime in Shreveport, and it seemed to have been connected to drug activity and gangs. And now we knew then, okay, what the source of it was. Now, I don't know if we've taken that close a look at it, and I think we need to find out. And once we find out what the cause is, we can figure out what we need to do to prevent it.
I have to agree with you on that answer because I don't think jobs is at the top of the list to why violence is going on the way it is in Shreveport. My thing is, if there's violence in the mind, then there's going to be violence on the street. So it goes back to your answer. What we need to find out is what's going on and how to teach one another to learn to be emotionally intelligent and deal with their issues in other ways than violence and stuff. But if we don't address that, then it can only get worse. But I don't think whether they have a job or don't have a job will put a big dent in violent crime in the city of Shreveport. But something you brought up, and I'm glad you did. I was going to ask you about it a little later. But Ashley, I don't know her last name, she is a homeless person in Shreveport, Louisiana, and she contacted us a couple of weeks ago, and she was telling us some things that had been going on with the homeless downtown in Shreveport and what they were trying to do to them and where they were trying to send them and stuff. And I don't believe that people wake up, Laura, and say, okay, I'm going to be homeless today. I interviewed a politician on the show one day, and that's exactly what he said, that homeless was a choice. And I don't think it is a choice. I think sometimes it's just life circumstances, and everybody, not everyone that's homeless is an alcoholic or is on drugs. So, but, and we don't want homeless people hanging out downtown in Shreveport, and we know that's bad for business, and business will leave, and businesses will not come if they, you know, see you laying all out and stuff. So we can't just give up on homeless and kick them to the side as if they don't exist. You know, they're inanimate objects and stuff. I mean, they have feelings. So how do we address that issue other than just pushing them over from one parish to another parish?
Well, I think that is back to the crime situation too. We can't just ignore something or hide it and have it go away. That's not going to happen. And pushing people out of town, in out of downtown into some other neighborhood, is only going to push the problem from one place to another. The cities where solutions for homelessness have been successful are ones that have looked for a program that put people in long-term housing and provided them with the services they needed, mental health services, HIV AIDS services, other kinds of healthcare services, education, job training, job coaching, and those kinds of things, and help finding some means of making enough that it, once they're in the long-term housing, they can actually buy groceries and pay utility bills. A lot has to do with just giving people dignity. And
exactly.
And there are a couple of ways of doing that. We have a model for one of them in Mercy Center that is part of the Philadelphia Center. That provides long-term housing for people and the specific services they need in that case. Another one is by utilizing subsidized housing. And both of those models have been used in New York City, for example, to address their homeless problem, which on scale was much worse than ours. But I think that we have to start out by thinking of these people not as homeless indigents, but as human beings that need care. And that's what we have all been, if we call ourselves Christian, and I know that it's true in other religions as well, when we are called care for the least of these, this is part of our responsibility. And it's part of what makes us a welcoming community.
I agree. Because, and not just to the fact to where it's them today, it could be us tomorrow, but, you know, as she just said, they're part of the community, they're part of Shreveport, you know, and so where we can help, then I think we should help, you know. But I know some people, you know, they kind of get relaxed, you know, when you get into a certain situation. But we can't put everybody in the same cup, you know. But you have some go out. Well, if we stand on the street and we hold a cup long enough, and that cup gets filled, then you'll put a cup in another hand, and then that cup gets filled. And so then there are benefits to some for being homeless. I hope I don't sound ugly when I'm saying this here. But when I can stand out there and do something close to nothing, then I don't have to go hit a time clock. I can basically work, you know, on schedule, so to say, and then I hold my hand out, and people will begin to feel sorry for me, and they give me food, they give me money and drinks or whatever and stuff, and then so that becomes my life, and I get comfortable with that, and so then I'm no longer trying to do anything to better myself. So we know we have people out there like that, but we can't put everybody in the same cup, because sometimes I think things happen. It's just life, you know. I heard a guy one day, he's a friend of mine, he's manager of a Family Dollar in Shreveport, and my sister and I was on our way to church one Sunday, and we stopped in there, and a lady outside and a man, and she had a dress, and she was throwing her dress up and down, and she, you know, she had nothing on, and we knew that from them from the street that they was homeless people, and they were on drugs and stuff. And so when I went in, he was on the phone. I said, I know you're calling the police, aren't you? He said, yeah, you know I have to. And so we understand that he has to do that. But when the police arrived, Laura, here's what he said, and it always stayed with me. He said, I don't want you to arrest them. And the cop looked back and he said, why? He said, well, if it wasn't for the customers, I wouldn't care if they stood out there all day, but I just want you to make them move. And he said, why don't you want them to go to jail? He said, well, I know they're on drugs, but here's what I don't know. I don't know how they got there. I don't know what got them to that point, you know. So rather than just putting cuffs on them all the time, sometimes I think humanity should come out and let's look at another way to deal with this, similar to some of the things that you just said about the homeless.
Well, exactly. There are different reasons why people are homeless, and those have to be addressed, but I don't think they can be addressed by simply moving them. And certainly in the case of drug addiction, that requires specific treatment. And until we accept that and do something about it, the problem is going to always be with us. It doesn't go away by itself, and it only makes for more problems when we ignore it. I just think that now we have to enforce laws. New York City does have a law against panhandling, and that was some of what you were talking about earlier. There are people who take advantage and are panhandlers. That was outlawed, and in place of that, they were offered other opportunities. I think that when it comes down, that is a decision. When you are either panhandling and breaking the law, or you're offered assistance in some other way and you refuse it, that might be a place where the homeless person themselves has to take some responsibility. But they're not always in a position to do that. I just think that we have to administer our laws with humanity and common sense and compassion.
I agree. So what do we do to get Shreveport back to where it once was, to where people were coming here to stay, businesses were coming here, and now they're not, you know, residents are leaving, you know, and I know crime's a big issue, but I think you said it earlier, it's just not crime that's causing people to leave the city of Shreveport and not want to come to Shreveport, you know. So leadership, I heard you said several times, plays a big role in what happens in the city of Shreveport, and I take it that's one of the reasons why you're running, because you see some things that are not right that you know could be better, and you would like to be instrumental in helping things get better for Shreveport.
Well, having grown up here, and my parents lived here, even though I went away to college and reared my family somewhere else and then came back to Shreveport. So I've seen a little bit of what goes on in other places as well. When I think Shreveport has some problems that have never been adequately addressed. And that is one of the reasons that we keep having problems. And until we face our demons and do something about it, we're going to continue to have problems. But another thing, when you mentioned businesses not wanting to come here, part of that is, well, part of our ongoing problem is our resistance to change, which is to some extent everywhere, I guess. But one thing that I think has changed is the way companies do business. And so there's a whole shift in the model, economic model. We, for years and years, cities would have one big major employer, and that would keep everything going. But I don't think that's as common anymore. So we can't depend on General Motors or Western Electric or the oil industry to provide all of the jobs. I'm not even sure that that's desirable in the first place, but I just don't think they people, companies do business that way anymore. So I know in some towns near where I lived before I moved back to Shreveport, they started encouraging entrepreneurship on a local level, and they supported through grants and city funding and county funding, they supported local businesses. For example, we used to have a small business incubator here at LSUS, and we don't anymore, but I think that would be very beneficial. And there are some other things we could do to encourage local businesses. In this one town that I'm talking about, they did that. Mm-hmm. They made a very concerted effort, and they attracted business because they were doing so well locally. We have tons of potential here. We have three universities. We have a first-class research medical school hospital. We have the arts that have done a tremendous job, and I think we could look at what they've done and perhaps apply those same principles to other, to growing other local businesses and economies in neighborhoods, starting in neighborhoods and developing neighborhoods with a neighborhood feel to them where you shop and bank and go eat all in the mm-hmm. same area. And it creates an attractive place for people to come. And we have a lot to offer with the river, with our cultural events. We have a mm-hmm. lot to offer.
I think that's some of what Mayor Anna Tyler wanted to do at one time.
Well, she may still want to, for all I know.
Okay. Businesses. Diversity. And I'm sure you've been asked this question a lot since you've been on the campaign trail there. And that's an issue in Shreveport as well, where black contractors feel that they're not getting a fair share of mm-hmm. bids in Shreveport. How do we address that? I don't even know if you agree with that, you know.
Yes, I do agree with it, because that's one of the, when I said there are a couple of things that are endemic here that need mm-hmm. to change, that should have changed many decades ago, that's mm-hmm. one of them. That's a big one. And until we do better with that, I don't see us ever really becoming the hub that we should be. We need to be, and that goes back to leadership, Al. That goes back to leadership again. There needs to be fairness in awarding contracts and diligence.
Okay,
but when we hire a contractor, we need to do our homework.
Exactly. So I'm going to put you on the spot here and ask you this question. Since we know that, you know, they're not being fair, what's the reason that blacks are not getting a fair share of the contracts in Shreveport?
Well, if I could put it in two words, I would say institutional racism.
That's it. I appreciate your honesty. I have to agree with you on that as well. And that's part of the change that we also need to work on in the city of Shreveport.
We are all, to some extent, victims of our history, our peculiar institution. All of us in this generation are to some extent victims of it, and we need to find a way not to be victims anymore, to be proactive in getting rid of institutional racism and coming together as one city rather than a divided one. And it's going to require some overcoming of years of history on both sides.
Laura, I'm glad you called in today, and I hopefully we'll get a chance to interview you again before the election. Are you speaking anywhere tonight or later this week that you would like to share with the listeners?
I will be at Anderson Island Neighborhood Association on September the 27th in the evening. And I will be at Interfaith on October the 11th. I think that's at Mount Canaan Baptist Church.
Okay.
And those are the two coming. Oh, and South Highlands Association meeting on October the 8th at Southfield School. That one will be a little bit earlier than the other two. That one will be at 5:30 on October the 8th. It's a Monday.
Okay. And they're all open to the public, right?
Yes.
Okay. And when will you be at Mount Canaan?
On October the 11th.
October the 11th. Okay. Someone is raising their hand and asking me to ask you a question about the streets in Shreveport in your neighborhood.
Right now? Go ahead.
Some of the streets you know are not drivable. They're full of potholes.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason for not getting to them is, I guess, it's been the same since the beginning of time. It's not enough money. But then we look at other streets in other neighborhoods that are being paved. And so then they wonder, well, where did they come up with the money for that? If that makes any sense to you.
Oh, it makes a lot of sense. It's one of the, it gets us back to something that I didn't address it directly, but was talking about before. When we talk about economic growth, and why we don't have it, or what we need to do to get it. And one of those things is that we have neighborhoods that have been underserved for decades and decades. And until we bring those neighborhoods the kind of service that they deserve and that they need, because they pay taxes too, just like everybody else, we are never going to be able to attract a lot of businesses, and we are always going to be short of money. One of the reasons that it's costing us so much right now to do the streets and sewers is that we put off doing it for decades and decades and decades, and now we have no choice. And we are still prioritizing some neighborhoods over others. We are going to have to look at, we're going to have to prioritize underserved neighborhoods and make every neighborhood a more desirable place to live.
I agree with you on that. We hope it never happens here in Shreveport like it's happening in other places and stuff, but I live by the what ifs. I mean, so what if this happens or that happens? And I think we need to be prepared for it. We've had some recently, some officer involved shooting stuff, but like the incident that we spoke about earlier in Dallas, Texas, deal with it through the community, have enough trust in Shreveport police officers to listen before, you know, they go out and get to vandalize and build into protests or things of that nature. We hope it never happens, but we have to be realistic and say that it could happen. I mean, it can happen anywhere. You know, you may not want it to happen, but it could happen. So are we ready to deal with something like this? I mean, because it's been happening a lot lately, and I think Shreveport has had two or three within the past two or three weeks, I think.
I think that's a question better answered by the police chief than me. But I think that we probably are at least have had some training. I think that you never know how prepared you are until you have to put that training into practice. So I think that it's not a matter of are we prepared so much as it is a question of are we preparing so that we are always prepared. Mm-hmm. And that we're evaluating our own efforts and being honest with ourselves about those.
Exactly. So we're watching other events, and hopefully we're learning from those events of, you know, what to do and what not to do. But I think when the community has a better relationship with the police department, things are easier to deal with to a degree.
I think that when there is not a lot of trust between the community and the police department, it makes every situation more difficult to deal with.
I agree. We did a story a while back, and this is an issue that I'm sure you're going to have to deal with one day if you're city councilwoman. Confederate issues, you know, mainly we'll go downtown in front of the courthouse.
Mm-hmm.
With the statue down there. I want to give you my take on this. For years, I've marched.
Okay.
I've marched to remove Confederate flags and statues and stuff. And about 5 years ago, my views on it changed because I began to see things a little different now. This is just my take on it. Many people do not agree with me, but this is my take. I don't think moving the Confederate statue is important. Because one thing you cannot do, even if you remove it, you cannot remove its history. Its history is still there. So I think the time that has been wasted on removing the Confederate statue could have, that time and money could have been used elsewhere, you know, on educating the police department on different issues in the city or whatever. But I think it's a waste of time to remove it, and you cannot remove the history of it. The history of it is still there. So now once you remove this one, then someone's going to play tick-for-tack. You got to come over here. Now we want this one to come up. You remove this one. Now we want the MLK statue to come up, and it goes on and on. But one thing you cannot do is remove its history. Now, with that being said, would you have voted for the removal?
The removal of the statue was very important to many people here. And it is I think that the key is that it, even though it's true, it's removing the statue is not going to remove the history. It's not going to remove the institutional racism that it represents. I do think that in the minds of many people, it's a step towards eliminating some of that past that we need to overcome that many people would like to cling to. So I don't think that we can't say, let's remove the statue and then we're done.
I see
it as a first step that is important, more important to some people than others, but what it represents, I can understand wanting to eliminate. It's a kind of this one historian psychologist has called it a place of memory. And it does represent that. It is a locus for people who want to remember our Confederate past. It's always there as kind of a beacon, so to speak. And mm-hmm. So I can understand why people would want it removed in that regard.
Laura, I have enjoyed speaking with you today. I wish you good luck on your campaign there. And as I said a little while ago, hopefully we will be speaking with you again. I'm going to try to meet with you at Mount Canaan. I used to be a member of that church. I hadn't been there in a while, so that's why I said I used to be there. Pastor Blake was over it, and I think he's since retired a few months ago. I think he did.
He's getting ready to retire.
Mm-hmm. So, anyway, again, I thank you for accepting the invite to come on today's show. And for those that are undecided, your undecided voters, didn't know much about you and until they listened to today's show, and they still might be somewhat undecided, but to try to swing a vote your way, what would you like to leave them with this afternoon?
I want Shreveport to be the best, most desirable city for people, all of its people, to live in. I want it to be that vibrant, dynamic city that I know I've known since I was a child it could be, that has been kind of my dream that one day before I die, I will see Shreveport be this community that I know it can be. And that is why I'm running for office.
You have been listening to Injustice Investigations with Al Scott and Laura McLemore. She is a candidate for District B in Shreveport, Louisiana. We thank you all for tuning in to today's show, and dear to Lord willing, we will see you tomorrow at 1 p.m. Again, Laura, thanks for giving us an interview today, and we look to speak with you more in the week. And good luck to you, Laura.
Thank you for having me, Al.
Have a good day. Bye-bye.
Bye.
And as always, I'm not always right, and you are not always wrong. We'll see you on the radio.